I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen, smelt from a distance, best seen up close, Mr. Morris. The man, the legend, my co-host and very dear friend. Do you know what I bought this week, Ian?
No, what did you buy?
I bought a new keyboard and a new mouse.
Oh, interesting. And how much did you spend? £500?
No, I sought out an actual cost of living crisis bargain.
Oh, really?
They were still very good. They're both Razer. But rather than doing what I historically would have done and said, I don't have kids and I like tech, therefore it's fine for me to buy whatever tech I want within reason. I actually thought, no, I'm going to be sensible. And I'm going to buy a mouse that does what I need. It is a gaming mouse. It was about £30, which is a very good price for a Razer.
Very good price for any mouse these days.
Yeah, and I bought the Razer Black Widow Mini V3 or some combination of those, which is a gaming keyboard. It's got RGB lighting and everything. It's very difficult, I found, to
must work brilliantly on the Mac.
To get, I don't use it on the Mac. It's very difficult, I found, to get a gaming keyboard that does exactly what you want, that is also really good, that's going to last for less than a couple of £100. And when I saw those prices, I was like, you can get stuffed a couple of £100. And then I found this one, which had an RRP of like 170 or 180. And I thought, it's a 65% size I want, because I wanted to be able to use it on the sofa as well as in my office. But then I looked at Amazon's warehouse deals, and I did this once before, and you can get some absolute bargains on there. They say as new, and in my experience, that generally means someone bought it, returned it, they can't sell it as new, so it goes in the warehouse, and you get like 30-odd% off for basically a brand new product. So I ended up getting for about £120, which made it a steal.
Good price, well done.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound patronising there because I don't mean to be. I did that warehouse thing with my Ergotron monitor stand, and when it
Ergotron, the least appealing transformer ever.
Yeah, but really sort of good at getting you compliant with work, health, and safety. He's a hero, but not for the normal kick-ass reasons. Anyway. The Ergotron arrived in my house, as things do when you buy them on Amazon, and it was all sort of scuffed and stuff, and it was described as, you know, as new quality, and it was only a few quid cheaper. So I was like, no, sorry lads, you're having this back. So back I sent it and bought a brand new one. I just had to wait a little bit longer, because that was why I'd gone for the second hand one, really, because I wanted it immediately.
Well, I can appreciate that. However, I think it is time we talk about arguably the biggest story of the week here.
Yes.
It was difficult for us not to talk about this. I'm sure everyone has seen it coming, and I have to slightly apologize for talking about it because, you know, I'm sure you've...
Yeah, we do try to stay away from these really big subjects, don't we, a lot of the time. You know, we're not ones to... You know, really go for the things that everyone else is covering. So this story, we'll apologise for it now.
We will, yeah. This is, of course, as will come as no surprise, that the fax machine in the UK has been condemned to death. Ofcom has opened a consultation, it's seeking feedback this month for the future of the fax machine, essentially to say, is it fair that we make BT support a product that is dated in the extreme and woefully underused, given that there are so many better, cheaper, and more effective ways of sending documents around. And I thought it was worth going into a bit of the background of the fax machine to figure out why we've got this far and fax machines are still being in, still being used. The fact that the history of the fax machine is far more interesting than the fact that it may be killed in Britain now.
Yes.
And the most notable date that I could pick out here is July the 17th, 2003. The government set out the extent to which communications networks must be made available or supplied, let's say, in the UK. And to keep that in check, Oftel, which is the precursor to Ofcom, said BT and KCOM, which I'd never heard of, Ian, but apparently operates in Hull.
Well, it's Karoo, I think, these days. Well, I don't know if that's... Is it? Well, certainly the broadband is Karoo, I think.
Ah, okay. Well, anyway, KCOM and BT, as it was in 2003, would be classed as universal service providers, which in short meant that they had an obligation to provide services that are reasonably affordable, reliable, available to everyone, accessible, all that kind of stuff. And that included being able to send faxes. And there have been changes to those rules over the years as things like broadband got better and faster and cheaper and obviously grew in importance. And faxes really are kind of unique right now in that... they rely basically exclusively on a very old analog technology to do something that almost anyone would only ever think of doing digitally, i.e. sending a scanned document or something to each other or a signature. And they worked, or should I say worked, I suppose I should say work, present tense, by sending tones over a phone line. I don't know if you've ever in the past accidentally phoned the fax number of a business or similar.
Oh yes, of course, everyone's done that.
Yeah, and what the answer you get is the sound of a dial-up modem, because it's essentially the same sort of technology, and relies on not necessarily copper cabling but analog and phone switching. So they need to be end-to-end, and we're not going to go into the super technical reasons for that. But the problem is, as we've talked about in the show before, that BT is moving all of that underlying technology over the next few years into, let's say the analog technology, into a digital IP-based system, which is, as far as fax is concerned, a little bit like ripping out the foundations of a house and expecting the house to just stay upright. But in fax's case, of course, and to extend the metaphor a bit further, it's a house that almost no one lives in, nor wants to. So why should BT be forced to keep supporting something that barely anyone uses and would require a huge cost to keep supporting it as part of a law that... that basically says it doesn't have to anymore, because it follows some stuff that happened in Parliament a couple of months back. So in short, Ofcom wants to check that it's not missing something obvious, running the consultation, and by the end of the month, it'll start making decisions. And then as of next year, we'll find out whether it can actually say, yep, by all means, BT and KCOM, just shut it off. No one's obliged to support fax, and that basically means the end of fax in Britain, as we know it today.
I was wrong, by the way. I think it used to be called Karoo, and now it's called KCOM. Anyway, confusion aside, this also must affect home alarms.
Why?
So, well, because one of the things that people were complaining about when BT started to move to the, you know, the 21st century network or whatever it's called, was that alarm systems operate in largely the same way. So, when you have a monitored alarm, which is monitored by the police, that is a phone line. And it can only be done that way. And that was part of the problem. People, you know, probably quite wealthy people for the most part, had these alarms fitted and then would find out that, in fact, they couldn't use them anymore. And it was a big problem, because if you have a lot of very valuable stuff in your house, you know, expensive furniture, stuff like that, and your insurance requires you to have a remote monitored alarm, that's a problem. And, of course, broadband goes down an awful lot more than a phone line. And also, you know, it could be easier to disrupt a broadband system. You know, there are all sorts of things that if you were a criminal, you could probably do to take down a broadband network, but you would struggle to do the same with a wired in analog phone system. So I do remember that being a similar problem. Of course, the fax dying is a shame, but why can't it be digital?
Well, it can. That's the thing. It's just not using the technology that is inherent or is built into existing fax machines that a lot of people have on their desks.
Well, sure, but if you plug that into a digital phone line, does it cease to work then?
It's something to do... I'm going off script here.
Is this because of the compression and stuff like that?
No, it's something to do with error correction.
Right.
And the fact that it can't reliably, because it's all based on tones, and it's possible for the tone to be interfered with as far as digital compression goes. I suppose it is a bit of compression. It's possible for the tone to be shifted in some way when it's turned digital. That means you're not necessarily going to get an accurate picture at the other end. It's something along those lines. Don't quote
I get
me
it.
On that.
But no, it's something, no, that makes sense. Like so that. It just doesn't work. I mean, it wouldn't be impossible to build a fax machine for the modern era that just sent data, but who wants that? No one wants that. We've got email.
It's called a scanner or an app or an iPhone, and we have scanning apps. And we have apps that act as a conduit for sending faxes. You can get apps that let you send an actual fax to an actual fax machine, but there's not a lot of call for that because we have things like DocuSign. However, there are
I have a printer that has a fax built in. It has a phone line socket on it.
And a lot of his did. And a lot of his
I still do.
Well, all right.
And it's brilliant. I love my printer.
Well, I wonder if you're going to love some of these facts, because I spent a lot of time this week reading about fax machines and the history of faxes. And I found some astonishing facts about the fax. Fax facts, yeah. Ah, very good. Technically, and this is subject to quite a lot of debate depending on how you interpret the word invented, but
yes,
it was invented in the early 1800s.
Wow.
By a chap called Alexander Bain. At least he invented, or is credited with inventing, some of the underlying technology, the electric telegraph.
I was going to say, is this a telegraph type thing?
So there was someone extrapolated from that and from some of the dates, and I assume this is an American, because they wrote, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in 1865. The samurai in Japan were abolished in 1867, but the fax machine was invented in 1843. Therefore, a samurai could have sent a fax to Abe Lincoln. Which is a wild extrapolation of reality, but is quite fun. And I mentioned it to a colleague of mine at the office who said that in 1890 there were no samurai, but there was Nintendo. So the child of a samurai could have sent a fax to about a Nintendo game to Queen Victoria, given that the fax back then, Nintendo games back then, were playing cards. So lots of interesting things. Yeah.
Yes.
But bringing it a bit more up to speed, that is to say up to present day, the question about why this is so controversial really depends on in what country you look at, because they tried to abolish the fax in Japan very recently, actually, during the pandemic, in fact. I think it was around 2021, maybe 2020. But there was a pretty overwhelming response by a lot of officials in government who loved faxes that basically forced their hand and said, you're not going to kill it. And one of the reasons that had been given to kill fax wasn't because they're crap and old-fashioned and no one used them. It was because during the pandemic, too many people were trying to use them in their offices, which was putting them at a risk of spreading the virus. Because I need to send a fax, so I can't work from home. I have to go to the office despite COVID and send a fax. And that was one of the reasons for getting rid of them, was like, well, if we allow this to happen, you know, many other reasons, but it was one of the ones that was cited, which I thought was quite interesting. And another story I found out in the BBC in 2012 cited a lot of traditional values in Japan for the fax sticking around, specifically the culture of handwriting, which is very firmly rooted in Japan and Japanese culture.
Of course.
So a lot of resumes and CVs are handwritten, because a lot of employers, apparently, based on this article, judge people's personalities based on their writing. And so having the ability to send a fax and fax greetings cards and things like that, it's often very handwritten. It was still a very convenient way to do that.
Can you imagine having to write a handwrite a CV? That would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. But over here, do you want to have a guess at how many fax machines the NHS has?
3.
8,000 or 9,000.
No way.
Depending on, yeah. They are apparently the biggest purchaser of fax machines. There was a Freedom of Information request by the Royal College of Surgeons in 2018 that showed the NHS Hospital Trust in England owned 8,209 fax machines. The most was at the Newcastle upon Tyne NHS Foundation Trust, which had 603 of them.
Now, that makes sense, because if you're dealing with sensitive patient information, email is just not going to cut it.
Exactly.
However, you would say that there should be an internal NHS secure email system because the government has one, GSI.
Yeah, well, the Ministry of Defence has a lot of them.
So why wouldn't we just use that again for the NHS? You know, build that system, you know, update it maybe, make it better. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of resistance for taking NHS records digital, which I think is part of the problem. You know, a lot of people don't like the idea of that, so would rather keep paper files. So I can sort of see how this comes about, because if you're a doctor, someone's rushed in, you only know their name, you need to urgently find out what their past treatments have been, etc., etc. You know, you call their doctor and the doctor faxes over the document, and that's a pretty secure way of doing it.
It's not flawlessly secure. No,
and so it's interesting, isn't it?
But you're talking about something that's analog.
Yes, it could certainly be intercepted very easily, and I mean, you know, governments would be able to do that quite simply. You know, if Russians wanted to break into that network, I doubt they would struggle. That said, you know, but why would anyone want to do that? It's more about sort of security from it not leaking out on the internet, which is much more of a problem if you use an email.
Yeah. I found another article. I wanted to find historically like how the use of fax has evolved over the years. And there was an interesting story on The Guardian from 2009. And I'll be including all the links to all of these stories and PDFs and documents and things that I found in the show notes in the MP3 and at uktechshow.com. But this article said that at least at the time in 2009, they were used by police forces for sending fingerprints, which I thought was very interesting.
That seems like a really bad way of introducing errors.
Well, that's what they were used for. Legal firms use them for signatures on contracts. That I think we know. Health authorities see them as more secure by email. Ministry of Defence also use those. But I found some interesting pop culture uses of the fax machine over the years. The most interesting one here, haven't verified this, Phil Collins dumped his wife by fax, according to
that. Sounds like a very Phil Collins thing to do, so I completely believe that. No further fact checking needed.
And what I like is the Guardian included a parenthetical editorial comment after that that said, these days, of course, relationships are ended by text message.
No one ends a relationship by a text message.
Well, I've done it before. Actually, I finished with someone by email once.
But not a serious long-term relationship, presumably.
No, I was about 18.
I mean, that happens when you're young.
You know, wouldn't do that today. But I just thought it was funny that they put that as a kind of, hey, we do it by text now, whereas now it's going to be, I don't know, TikTok. How do kids break up with each other? Probably just stop talking to them, don't they? Ghost them, as we've discussed in the past.
I do want to say that in the chat, we had a very witty joke from Adam McCauley, who said if you were trying to get into patients' records via fax, you'd have to break the encryption of doctor's handwriting, which I thought was very good.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant his other comment. Did I say dump them by text message? And I just wanted to offer that if anybody would like to break up with a spouse via the podcast, you know, times are tough.
I'm not getting involved in that.
Times are tough. You know.
Well, how would that help?
Well, they would pay us to tell their husband or wife or whoever that they don't want to be with them anymore. And we would take, I don't know, what, £1,000?
I mean, I wouldn't do it for less than that.
We'd put some funny music behind it.
Would we just send them an MP3, or would we have to call them, or would we do it in the show? It would be like the modern newspaper. So at the end, you'd have births, deaths, marriages, and separations all read by us, and people could send them in by fax, obviously, and we'd read them out. I mean, it's actually a monetization route that I think we should consider.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. That's a tangent. So that's fax machines.
No surprise there.
No. The other thing I was going to ask you about is your personal experience with the Humble fax over the years. And I wanted to give you some thinking times by telling you that I remember when I worked in a camping shop when I was about 16 years old, 17 years old, we had a fax machine because we used to get orders and we used to make orders to suppliers using the fax machine. It was one of those that had it wasn't A4 sheets. It was like a spool of slightly glossy fax paper. And every Saturday when I came in, one of the first things I did was tear off the huge amount of junk faxes that had come in overnight. And it's that, just thinking about that now, it's just, it's insane how wasteful that is in so many ways.
And I was going to say, that's my exact memory, because we had them at the BBC and all they would ever do is print junk. They never did anything useful.
Well, we did use them, but we never
used
them.
I don't think we ever did, but...
Really?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I believe that you, back in the day, for example, you could fax, say, Watchdog, but I don't know if anyone ever actually did it.
I bet someone did it. Was it Sue Cook? She was on... Was she on Watchdog?
I don't know. When I worked at the BBC, it was Anne Robinson on Watchdog, I think.
Oh, no. I think Sue Cook was before.
Maybe.
I may be wrong.
They converted a big part of the ground floor at White City to turn it into a studio. And I just used to walk through it every now and then just for fun. Because it's quite cool.
It's good to have a hobby.
Yeah. I used to do a lot of that sort of thing, though. I used to walk around the donut of Television Centre and amuse myself.
Oh, I've done that before, but I always had a chaperone because I didn't work there.
Yeah, I was allowed out.
Yeah.
Could just wander the halls like some sort of demented...
Sort of like...
TV
like
person.
Alan Partridge searching for his next job, just walking around the ring.
Yeah.
Well, I think we fully exhausted the fax machine, both literally and figuratively here. No, both were figurative, but from a different standpoint. We've exhausted the story and
excited to see what does happen.
Well, me too. I suspect it'll go the way of the pager.
And we did have a question, actually, during that. I can't remember who it was. Was it Adam again? So asked, what happens if you dial 999 on a digital phone line and there's a problem? I believe that they're as reliable as analog phone lines. It's not less reliable as such. It's just a different system.
Yeah. That would have been my understanding as well. They're not gonna risk that. But maybe you have a memory of the fax machine. Have you broken up with somebody via fax? Have you received a questionable image via fax? I'd love to hear about all these things. Your memories make this show worthwhile when you send them to us, and you can do so by sending us an email, only email.
Hello, yeah, no faxes.
hello@uktechshow.com.
Nate, Twitter, I'm sorry. I know you're not a big tweeter.
No, I deleted all my tweets.
Did you?
Yep.
Really?
I mean, I barely used it, and I had tweets on there that date back to like 2007 or something.
Certainly a problem. I mean, if you're planning a presidential run, I would definitely suggest that people delete their history, just because obviously you saw what happened to Liz Truss.
You write different things when you're 22, don't you?
You do, but I also think that society needs to appreciate the fact that people do things differently as they get older. I am, as a very nearly 45-year-old man, not the same man I was. Well, I'm not the same man I was 5 years ago, let alone, you know, 25 years ago. Anyway, that's an aside. We all know that Elon Musk has just purchased Twitter for probably 40 billion more than he should have done. It's cost him 44 billion. I'm saying Twitter's probably worth 4 billion at best. He's now making massive cuts to the business under the guise of returning it to profit. However, rather than taking his time and doing it the right way, he's leapt in and fired whole business units in a single day. The accessibility team, for example, seems to have gone, including the person responsible for implementing alt tags, which are extremely useful if you're, you know, in any way you need to use a screen reader for your tweeting. So that's bad. Musk will also change how the verified badge works from next week. Instead of a manually curated group of people who are public figures or notable for their work or in need of just verifying who they are, any old monkey can pay $8 or apparently $4.99, you told me that, Nate, in the UK, to join Twitter Blue, which will obtain you a verified checkmark. The funny side of that, of course, is that verified people are now changing their name to Elon Musk and urging other users to drink their urine.
Lovely.
Yes, they are. That's happened more than once. Well, lots of people are changing their names to Elon Musk. Not so many people are suggesting they drink their own urine. Because, of course, and one of the things that the moderation team does still seem to be doing is finding those people who change their name to Elon Musk and are verified and taking away their verification tick, which, of course, they'll be able to get back on Monday. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, that. So that's hilarious, but the less hilarious part is that vulnerable users will be far more easy to impersonate, which could lead to some real unpleasantness. Now, I want to bring up, because she posted about it publicly, Ellen Rose from outside Xbox. She said exactly this, you know, when she was having some problems online and someone was impersonating her and it was extremely unpleasant. And the only saving grace was that her verification mark meant that people knew who was the real Ellen and who wasn't. And I think that is probably an example that you will find repeated over and over again. Now, look, you know, you and I, it's nice to have our verification marks. Am I going to miss it when it's gone? Yeah, I feel sad. But realistically, I'm not going to pay for it. I don't see the point. If they said to me, we're going to charge you, but you'll be able to keep it, but we won't be just letting anyone on, I would say that's more tempting, especially as it's not massively expensive. But at the same time, what's the point? Like, you know, I mean, no one likes verified users anyway. We're the constant butt of jokes, and all people ever say to me is, oh, you've only got 5,000 followers. How are you verified? I'm like, well, because it's not about the size of your following, is it? It's about what value you bring to the platform. And I always took it seriously and felt that you shouldn't, you know, spread disinformation. You should do your best journalistic work to try and make sure that, you know, whilst you would mess around on Twitter, you wouldn't misrepresent the truth in a meaningful or harmful way. So I took it seriously. Obviously, some people didn't, but even so, it's going now, so it will be an absolute storm of feces.
Well, you a couple of minutes ago you implied that I wouldn't pay the $4.99 to go to Twitter
because Blue. I asked you and you said you wouldn't, but anyway, go on.
Ah, right, yeah. Well, you're right, I wouldn't. No. But the reason that we picked this is because it's one, the UK over the weekend was announced as one of the countries that would be able to move into this new world of paying for your verification.
Because we didn't have Twitter Blue until this weekend, it seems.
Well, I don't know. I think
no, we didn't.
Oh, we definitely didn't, did we not?
No, I've checked. Because I thought, this was ages ago. When they first launched Twitter Blue, I thought, might be some advantages to that. Actually, there aren't. I like the idea of escaping paywalls, but it's such a small subset of services. It's not particularly useful. I constantly hit paywalls. That's the thing. And, you know, if Twitter could do a service where it was paying my way through a paywall, that would be great.
Well, I didn't know that. I did know that it's. I looked it up as an in-app purchase in the UK store, and it's there for £4.99 a month for Twitter Blue. One of the features of which is, as you say, gets you this verified badge. Now, what's particularly funny about this personally is that yesterday my mother-in-law came over to see us and to do some work in the garden and things. And she said, oh, isn't it weird that you're going to be able to pay, anyone can just pay to have a verified mark? And I pushed back and said, no, I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, you still have to be of note, like you still have to verify that you are who you say you are in the way you always have. It's just that if you then want to have that badge displayed, you then also have to pay, which would mean that people like me and you who have verified tick marks because of our position in the media or what have you, we had to be verified in the first place and we would lose it if we didn't pay. And I said I wasn't going to pay. But actually, it turns out that I think my mother-in-law was right and I was wrong. And actually, that isn't what it is. It is that anyone can pay and get a blue tick. And as you say, it essentially makes the existence of the blue tick as it is today meaningless.
Absolutely right.
And opens up a huge potential storm of abuse for all the reasons you've mentioned. It has the potential not to, depending on what else is introduced, but a lot of this stuff's being done quite quickly, and that's certainly the concern. So the question for me would be, is there a two-tier system of possible here? In that there
oh,
is
yes,
a,
it's possible.
There is the blue tick you get for being Twitter blue, in addition to some other label that, again, you only get if you're paying for Twitter blue, that says not only are you a paying customer in the same way that you get a little gold star on your LinkedIn if you're a LinkedIn premium user, but you also say someone at Twitter has verified you are you, which would at least then mean you've got the kudos of having a blue tick and showing off that you've paid some money. But you've also got a little attribute that says, and by the way, I really am a person and I've gone to some length to verify it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know why he didn't do this. It wouldn't have been any more difficult. I would have suggested maybe the verified people move to, I don't know, like a silver color or something. I mean, that's probably very difficult to do. Let's say people who are verified get red and paying customers get gold or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's, or even verified stay blue, and if you pay, you
get
gold.
It's country by country. So the UK being among the first alongside the US to have this means that although they're not instantly going to say everyone who doesn't pay within a month gets their blue tick removed, there is a few months grace period. But I think it'll be very interesting to see what institutions like government and politicians and things, what they do. Like, do they go and justify paying £4, £5 a month to keep the blue tick? Because
I don't know. But I mean, what's the value of it? Because if I can set up, the Democratic People's Republic of England and get the same blue tick as, the UK government, then really it has no value whatsoever, and you might as well save your money. What I find interesting, actually, as someone just sort of put this in the chat, it's triggered something as an idea, because what they do is they, when you have, like, when you're the president of the United States, you have, and this is Rich and Russ have put this in, you get, like, you know, United States government official underneath it. So what he could have done is he could have monetized that area. He could have said, okay, you can have any message you want there within reason or something, you know, or I don't know, a promotional link or something. Like,
I think
there are lots of ways that people could have paid.
I think that's part of it. I think that is still part of it. But whether
you get that, do you? Elon confirmed that's what's happening. Interesting.
Yeah, it's messy, and that's been a lot of the criticism about what's happened here, is that it's been messy and it's been unclear.
Yes.
And we could hypothesize what's going to happen, but as far as this affecting people in the UK is concerned, we're going to be among the first to see how it goes wrong potentially. Which is both good and bad. Who knows?
But also, he's not going to be able to plug his financial gap with this, because there was some very interesting tweets happening recently. For example, apparently a big part of companies like Facebook and Google and Twitter will do something very similar to the TV companies, where they will go out ahead of the next coming year and they will say, right, who would like to sign up for advertising? You know, you get a discount, you buy a bunch, you know, you buy 10 million. And media buyers would do that. So they would then make a profit selling that to big companies. I use media buyers at work for exactly this kind of thing. But a lot of companies apparently were so freaked out by the fact that Musk was going to buy it that they refused to spend money last year for this year, for next year. I wanted to wait and see what would happen. So Twitter actually doesn't have that promise of revenue, which it would usually have. Then you add onto that the fact that advertisers are already saying they're not prepared to advertise on Twitter anymore, and they want to distance themselves.
I've heard different to that. I've heard, because I've been covering this week. At Bloomberg, which is that a lot of them are not explicitly saying we're not going to. They're just saying we're basically wait and see. Like,
yes,
they're waiting to see what's happened. They're not saying they're not going to. They're just, they want clarification.
And I can tell you from personal experience that the companies that are not saying anything are also quietly dialing back their expenditure for the time being. That won't last. I know that. But I'm just saying that this has become problematic. If he'd gone in and run this company like an adult, put someone responsible in charge, he wouldn't be having this problem, and he might be able to walk away from it in a few years, having turned, you know, made, having maybe made more money. And I'm not saying that you can't sack people, but the way that he's gone about it is very distasteful, and big businesses just won't want to be associated with that. Now, of course, we all know that that will fade. Big business doesn't remember things like that. But whilst it's in the headlines and causing controversy, they won't want anything to do with it. Elon's on Twitter going, oh, I should name and shame all these companies that are putting their advertising. You know, it's pathetic. It is the most pathetic thing I've seen anyone of that status doing. I mean, has he got nothing better to do with his time? It's just unbelievable that anyone could be that petty-minded. It's like putting me in charge of it. I'm the only person I think worse qualified to run Twitter than Elon Musk.
Carry on.
Sorry. Well, I can't. I've done now. You need to start the Ian's rant a little bit earlier. But it is pathetic, and it is really telling of the society that we live in now, at the position we find ourselves, that a memeing child can be in charge of what was a $44 billion company and is now approximately worth £15.
Well, if you have a view on how much Twitter is worth, and if you're going to help it stay in business by buying a blue tick, then you can let us know by sending us an email to hello@uktechshow.com. We're very interested in seeing what happens. And as Ian says, it's all looking very positive and exciting. So I'm sure there's lots of good things to come, and you can tell us about them. hello@uktechshow.com. I'm going to thank people now, Ian. Are you ready?
Go for it.
All right, here it comes. Patrons, I want to thank you for supporting us directly. I'll be honest, this has gone horribly off tangent. Let's just not do that. But I do honestly want to thank some patrons. Tim, who's recently signed up. We've also got Ian Baxter, that is, not Ian Morris, who's re-pledged recently. So thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone who's listening live. If you want to join them, you get the full version of the show every week, ad-free, access to the entire back catalogue, also ad-free. You can choose to get our unedited live versions as well, again, all ad-free and back catalogue. You can listen to every show we've ever recorded since doing Patreon, that is, in their unedited raw form. Pre-show is in there, post-show is in there. It's good fun. A lot of people seem to like that. You get extra message and a ton of other stuff. Go to patreon.com/UKTech. And if you're one of those people, we are going to now talk about our third discussion story of the week, which is basically, where the hell are we buying our electronics these days? It's time to hear from one of our favourite people, but not yet, because I just noticed we have to also we have to read the bit that's in front of that in the script, because we had some feedback from Sean, who tweeted us on at Texas Message Pod after we tweeted about 5G. Would you like to take that in while I load up?
Yeah,
Tom's
sure. Thing? Speaking of 5G, today marks the 10th anniversary of the launch of 4G in the UK with the EE, which had only just come into being following the merger of T-Mobile and Orange. And that was, from Sean Jenks on Twitter. Yeah, interesting.
10 years of 4G.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
I remember going to a press preview of EE when it was about to launch 4G for the first time, thinking, oh, this is amazing, and then seeing the prices, which at one point was measured in 500 megabytes a month on 4G. Oof. And it was expensive. Can you imagine?
They've always been a bit like that, haven't they? And they still haven't really changed.
Oh, they have. I've got unlimited 5G. I use hundreds of megabytes a month for about 25 quid. Well, you can get it too. It's not just me.
Well, you say that, but we've been through this before, and it turns out, in fact, I can't. Yes, and that you get it because you've been a customer or something.
No,
I don't know.
You can definitely still get that. I'm going to EE right now. Other mobile networks are available.
I'm already on O2. I don't care. I'm perfectly happy.
So you get, SIM only. This is one deal. 200 gigabytes of month from 23 quid.
And well, that's not unlimited, is it?
And you get 6 months of Apple Music included. You get
unlimited
5G for £28 a month. That's pretty good. Unlimited 5G, no cap, one inclusive extra £36 a month. I mean, it's not all right. It's not crazy cheap, but I mean, compared to 30 odd quid a month for 500 megabytes of data, we've come a long way in 10 years.
But what I said to you is absolutely true. So, for example, if I want to be on a 1 month deal, I've got a choice of 1 gigabyte of data for £22 a month, 5 gigabytes of data for £25 a month, or 25 gigabytes of data for £28 a month. It's only if I sign up for 24 months that I start to get anywhere near unlimited. And well, in fact, actually, you're right. There is an unlimited one. That's £28 a month. But that's 2 years commitment. Now, I signed up for 2 years when I went to O2 because, well, I was going to end up having to sign up that long on the Virgin broadband anyway. So I was like, well, whatever.
There are loads of networks now that offer unlimited 5G for less than 35 quid a month, I think. But the point is, Sean was right to point that out. So thank you, Sean, for that. Also, thank you to Tom Merritt, because he keeps me posted on what's been happening in the wider world of technology news this week. And here's what he says they've been talking about.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Dr. Nikki told us how climate change is bad for cloud computing. Tim Stevens talked to us about the tech Mercedes is developing to keep EVs safe even after a crash. Etsy unveiled Search by Picture. It's pretty useful. We talked to Jerry Ellsworth about Tilt 5, a shipping augmented reality product that's actually fun. And we examined how the chip shortage has quickly turned into a chip glut and what that means for all those chipmaker plans to build all those shiny new factories. All that and much more at Daily Tech News Show.com.
And we should point out that Tom is American, so when he says chips, he means crisps. So there's a crisp crunch going on right now. Ian, what is your favorite crunchy crisp?
I think it's the what are those new, what do you mean, like a flat potato crisp?
Mate, I didn't think about this other than to make a slight joke about saying chips.
I know, it's good, very good. I like the ridged ones that
you like. A ridge, yeah.
I like a ridge, yeah. I think they give the crisp something that you can't get with a flat potato chip. Tom and I had a little mini chat on Twitter about the impending doom of the platform, and we sort of discussed maybe going to IRC or Usenet. You know, remember news groups?
I do. I remember paying 50 pence a minute to dial into them as well.
Yeah.
So there was billing it to my parents.
Yeah, so there's a little chat about that, which I quite enjoyed. Someone suggested CompuServe, and I was forced to remember that they had Worlds Away, which is sort of like the metaverse and Twitter, sort of, real time, you know, in 1995. So maybe we should get CompuServe to bring back Worlds Away.
Yeah, let's do that. Thank you, Tom. DailyTechNewsShow.com, that's where you can go to listen to news as it happens, as opposed to opinions as they occur to us, which is the main difference between our two programs. We're going to be back next week. If you would like to support us free, please find it in the deepest depths of your aortic pump, your heart, and go and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or add a star in Spotify, or wherever you're listening to your podcast, or just tell someone, for the love of God, because it really helps us. And if you want to listen to our extended show, where, as someone pointed out in our live chat, this week we had not just an Ian rant, but a Nate rant this week. That is available patreon.com/UK Tech. And unless Ian wants to bring anything into the final few seconds of the show, we're going to wish you all a very Merry Christmas eventually.
These nuts.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.